This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. So how long did it take you to get to work today? And how long will it take you to get home? We've talked a lot in recent days about the problems with the T, but what about the roads? Record amounts of snow have narrowed many of the city's already narrow streets, slowed and snarled traffic, even along the major thoroughfares. WBUR's Kurt Nickisch has been monitoring the roads and the rails, talking to public officials all day today, and he's in the studio now with us. Hi, Kurt.
Hey, Anthony.
So tell us what we're looking at in terms of the commute. Some people had a really tough time on the roads this morning and on the rails. What does it look like is happening out there today?
Well, let's start with the T because that's been the focus of service ever since it was shut down yesterday. It was very limited and there were big backups, big problems. People waited for up to 2 hours to get on trains at the JFK UMass station. The Braintree, sub branch is closed down. It will be through Sunday. And so you had these long lines, backups at certain places. A lot of people decided to take the T thinking it would be easier than driving, and they couldn't find places to park in the usual garages and parking lots. The orange line was already full leaving Forest Hill Station. The blue line is currently down right now in the heart of its line, really, between Suffolk Downs and Maverick due to a wire problem. The green E line has been suspended beyond Brigham Circle. The only line that seems to be running well is the silver line. And that's the one taking you to the airport and getting on that flight to Miami.
Right. Something a lot of us would appreciate right now. What about the roads? Where are the major traffic bottlenecks? What are you seeing out there?
Well, it's kind of backwards from a typical commute. The real backups are the back roads. The lesson here is don't take the back roads. It's really taking commuters a long time to just get out of Boston, for instance, longer to sort of make their way onto the Mass Pike than it is to actually take the Mass Pike home. And the reason is you just have less shoulder space for the snow. And so a lot of these streets that are four lanes are down to one or two because of snow at the shoulders. You have garbage trucks stopping and taking service. And basically, there's just no room to go around. You have buses and trucks that are having a harder time making turns and getting stuck, like a boat. A truck hauling a boat downtown getting stuck and blocking an intersection today. And so those sorts of things are really gumming up the secondary roads, getting you to the big ones. And the other thing is, you have people out there walking on them, and you can't sort of, with the snow, you can't stop as quickly, you can't get through the light as quickly. So, operations people talk about reduced capacity and reduced throughput, and that's what's really backing up much of the traffic.
Sure. Now, I know you've been speaking to public transportation officials today. What are they saying? What are you hearing from them?
Well, they say that it's not going to change quickly. Expect moderate to severe delays on the T. And I didn't mention that commuter rail lines, all of them have either delays or limited service today. And then roads, Boston officials say that they, were able to remove 1,500 truckloads of snow off the roads overnight, last night, and they're going to do the same again tonight, but it's just not enough to handle the usual demand. There isn't as much conversation about reducing demand or shifting demand, about employers offering flexible work hours or people delaying start to school days, things like that, that would actually maybe help take 10% of the people off the road at certain times, which could make more than a 10% difference.
Sure. Now, Kurt, we're expecting more snow tomorrow, followed by frigid cold, and then what could be a significant snowstorm Saturday into Sunday. That's only going to make all of this worse.
Yeah. Fortunately, falling on the weekend. We also have a number of days in the in-between where more of this road work and cleanup work can take place. And so next week's commutes, even with some of these upcoming flurries, should be better, but we've got to get there first.
All right. WBR reporter Kurt Nickisch, thanks so much for joining us.
Sure thing.
And let's talk more about the troubled MBTA. After being completely shut down yesterday, some subway and commuter trains were running on a limited schedule today, albeit with delays, as we just heard from Kurt. Meanwhile, the Massachusetts Department of Transportation Board, which oversees the T's, met today in Boston. The meeting comes amidst much concern about an aging system. And a day after MBTA General Manager Beverly Scott delivered a spirited defense of her staff and the T's performance during these difficult days. WBUR reporter Jack Lepiarz is at the Mass Department of Transportation meeting, and he joins us now. Hi, Jack.
Hi, Anthony.
What are you hearing at this meeting? Are board members, first of all, standing by Beverly Scott's management of the T?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's very safe to say that MBTA General Manager Beverly Scott is not going anywhere anytime soon. So let me paint this situation for you. So it was a packed meeting, and before the executive session started, we had about eight people come up, all of them offering nothing less than full-throated support. One person saying, don't throw Beverly Scott under the bus. Don't make Beverly Scott a scapegoat for what's really the culprit is an overtaxed system, an aging system, an underfunded system. Then we got into the statement by Transportation Secretary Stephanie Pollack, the woman who has been described by Governor Baker as Governor Baker's voice on this board. And she said in no equivocation, she said, I would not be part of an administration that wanted to oust Beverly Scott. She says, you can go and ask Governor Baker if you want, but he has no plans to oust Beverly Scott from her position currently.
Well,
and then,
yeah, go ahead.
After this, we heard from the board themselves. We heard from Chairman John Jenkins, who echoed those claims. And then the board unanimously approved a vote of confidence in support of Beverly Scott.
All right. That sounds like a pretty overwhelming expression of support. Yesterday, Scott stood up for her agency in a big way and defended her handling of the service during the recent snowstorm, saying the system needs more investment overall. She spoke today as well, right? What did she say about funding for the T and other matters?
Well, she didn't talk so much about funding. What she did is she tried to explain exactly the struggles the T has been facing. And it gets sort of into the nitty-gritty details of exactly how the T works. She talks about, you know, we all know exactly what ankle depth snow is. What that essentially equates to is above rail depth snow. And they have these heaters essentially along the rails to make sure that snow doesn't pile up over them. But she said when you have snow that's as high as your waist, the heaters simply don't work. So when you talk about a switch failing, a switch being, you know, what directs the trains to go forward or to stop in one spot, you have absolutely a switch failing because it's got a foot and a half of snow on top of it. So that was what she laid out. It wasn't so much calling for funding, and she sort of waffled on the issue of exactly what the T needs right now. She did say something along the lines of better equipment, and better training for T employees so that the next time something like this happens, they can immediately go out there and they know exactly what to do.
Finally, Jack, one of the issues on the agenda for the Mass DOT board was a review of the late night T service, which is right now in the midst of a pilot program, which has been running additional trains and buses later on Friday and Saturday night. What about that?
Yeah, well, the report that came out, you can sort of look at it two ways. On one hand, the T is projected to do better in terms of revenue than it expected. It's going to get about $100,000 more in terms of revenue from this service than it expected to when it first launched it in March of last year. The downside is that it's still nowhere near making a profit. It costs about $16 million to run. It's only going to bring back $2,100,000. You can argue whether that's sustainable or not, but the fact of the matter is that the T is essentially paying $7.68 for every person to ride the T on weekends after 12:30 in the morning. So they're going to continue this pilot until June of 2015. We know that already. The options from there they have to address because they said essentially we cannot continue at this situation. So we can either cancel late night service. We can scale it back, change the service in some way so that it's cheaper to operate. We can look at different fares. If you get on the train after 12:30, say it's $5 instead of $2.65. And then the other option is looking for more sponsors. There were sponsors that pitched in to help make this work. Those are four options they're looking at and any other options that possibly come up.
All right. WBR reporter Jack Lepiar is at the Massachusetts Department of Transportation board meeting in Boston. Jack, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
So days of record-setting snowfall, closed schools, long, difficult commutes, a crippled public transportation system, and more snow on the way. It's all just a reminder of how fragile even a modern city can be. That's a theme that Yoni Applebaum has been writing about. He's a senior editor at The Atlantic who oversees the politics section. He lives in Cambridge and made it into our studios, and he's here right now. Welcome back to the program, Yoni. Good to have you.
It's great to be here again.
So a couple of weeks ago, we talked to you about the blizzard of 1888, which was a ferocious storm that clobbered the Northeast from New York to Boston. And one of the points you made was that it was a real wake-up call, a reminder that cities of that era were pretty fragile in their makeup. Seems like this latest series of storms and heavy snow are all reminding us that that's still the case.
Well, like a lot of your listeners, I've been reflecting on that as I sit in traffic or wait for the schools to reopen for my kids. The very things that make cities so resilient in ordinary times, all of the complicated urban infrastructure that we've built, makes them peculiarly vulnerable during catastrophic events like the snow that's been piling up for the last several weeks.
Yeah, it seems really to be the case. And it really seems like, I don't know, that the basic fabric of urban living is being stretched pretty thin these days. I mean, for those who drive to work, the commute this morning was awful. But if you decide not to drive, to stay off the road, it's not like the public transportation system is much of an option because that's been hit pretty hard, as we've been hearing. So what's a commuter to do?
We're facing a stress test for our urban systems. Right now, there isn't a good solution because this is a short-term crisis, which is built on the back of long-term underinvestment in infrastructure. And the most anyone can do right now is promise to shovel a little bit faster, to plow a little bit better, to try to find new ways to get the snow or new places to put it. But that's ultimately not going to solve the problem. This will happen again the next time the snow piles up. And even those efforts at clearing the snow can't possibly happen quickly enough to satisfy frustrated Boston residents.
But you know, it occurs to me that piece you wrote about the blizzard of 1888, you made the point that it really gave birth to the modern mayor and really sort of compelled people to think in an organized way about how to respond to a blizzard. Do you think something like this is going to actually change the thinking among public officials and policymakers and really do something different? I mean, for as one example, get serious about investing in the MBTA, for example.
Well, we have an MBTA because it did work in 1888. That's what gave birth to our present subway system. And we haven't seen a whole lot of investment or upgrades in that system, particularly over the last several decades. Every elected official facing a crisis like this is looking at a two-pronged challenge. They've got to convince voters in the short term that they're doing everything they humanly can to help solve the challenges that face voters immediately. And then they've got to simultaneously perform the political act of alchemy of taking the short-term outrage that everyone feels and transmuting it into a long-term commitment for serious and sustained investment. It's interesting, Anthony, the only person I've seen doing that here in Boston over the last several days is somebody who's not an elected official at all, and that's Beverly Scott. She's gotten up there and articulated a vision for what her system needs, explained why it hasn't happened until now, and given honest voice to her own outrage about what's taking place. And the result of that is an outpouring of support for Beverly Scott. And I think what we saw today at the team meeting, as Jack was reporting, is what happens when an elected official or any public official is able to channel the outrage of voters in a constructive direction. She was supported and applauded by all sides and took a job which just a week ago seemed extraordinarily vulnerable and had the governor's new appointee to the board endorsing her and promising to commit to her in the long term.
And what about the performance of other public officials? You wrote in that piece about mayors, for example. How do you think this mayor, Marty Walsh, has responded, or other public officials, like the governor, for example? What are you seeing?
Well, I think that they form a fairly stark contrast to Beverly Scott. I would like to believe that they're doing everything they can. I imagine they're facing the same problems that the rest of us are and are just as frustrated. But it's important for any elected official in a time of crisis to be out there demonstrating to his or her constituents that they're doing everything they possibly can. And I think that it's up to the voters ultimately to decide whether or not they think Governor Baker and Mayor Walsh are doing that. I think that the way that Beverly Scott managed to tap a well of outrage and frustration suggests that perhaps many voters are dissatisfied.
All right. Well, that's Yoni Applebaum. He's a senior editor at The Atlantic. He oversees the politics section at The Atlantic. He lives in Cambridge. Yoni, thanks so much for coming in. We really appreciate it.
A pleasure.
Listeners, stay with us. Still ahead, Congressman Stephen Lynch on the War Powers Act and the 9/11 report. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.